You're listening to Chad Hartman, weekdays noon to 3 on WCCO and streaming live on WCCO.com.
I think a lot of people are saying, here we go again. Air Asia Flight 8501 disappearing, 162 people on the plane, 32,000 feet, and vanishes off radar. Couple days of searching, no signs so far. One of the best in the business to talk about this is Mary Schiavo. She's held a number of prominent jobs in this area, including she was Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation from 1990 to 1996, and she's been very busy, and I appreciate her giving us about 10 minutes to talk about this. All right, Mary, it's hard to believe we have a similar story in such a short window compared to what happened with the Malaysian flight. What part of the story just surprises you and baffles you most so far?
Well, I think on the most basic level, why an airline dispatches its planes into this horrible weather, the convergence in monsoon season of several typhoons and unbelievable weather. And so when the pilots then apparently, and we don't know much, but they got in trouble because they're asking to deviate around thunderstorms and try to climb above them, which is pretty much impossible because these thunderstorms went up over 50,000 feet and the plane can't operate over 40,000 feet. But why to put all these people in that situation in the first place is a real question, which would be asked in the United States. We have weather dispatch at every airline, and they're responsible for reviewing the weather with the pilots as well. So that's first and foremost the question. The other one is some stuff that just doesn't make sense. The pilot was apparently climbing, even though air traffic control had not given permission to climb. That's putting yourself in harm's way and at risk of a mid-air collision because there was traffic above them. So there are a lot of disconnects that don't make sense. But first and foremost, I don't think you want your planes in that weather anyway.
So let's stay with the weather idea. So as the plane, because it was fairly early in the trip, as this is laid out, it's your belief from knowing this well that they just should have taken a completely different path and they shouldn't have crossed to this part of the weather? And is that right. Was that realistic to do that?
Sure, or just cancel the flight. I mean, it is monsoon season, but and there were some planes that made it through this weather, and this one did not. But that's the way weather is. I mean, these kinds of, you know, thunderheads, they build very quickly. I mean, the pilot could have gotten permission to climb, and the thunderhead could have climbed faster than the plane. Because at those altitudes, planes, they have limits to their climb ratios, and they have limits to what they can do. And, in fact, operating in the outer edge of the plane's capabilities, which it clearly was in this case, in this thunderstorm and trying to climb at this level, it's already in the area of the operational chart called the coffin corner, meaning it's tough to fly in conditions like this.
How important, Mary, will it be for the folks involved in this investigation to talk to other pilots who were in that general area to understand how difficult the weather was to try to determine if weather was the reason this plane has disappeared?
Well, I think that's one of the things that they will do, but and it'll be very enlightening as to how they got through the weather, et cetera. Now, the instruction on going through thunderstorms, if you find yourself in a thunderstorm situation that you weren't anticipating, the rules are not rules. The recommendations from the Federal Aviation Administration are to keep going, and it's kind of like what Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep going. Well, that's the rules in going through thunderstorms. And so you're not supposed to turn around because your weather radar is forward-looking. It could be worse behind you. And so in some ways, once they were in it, they were doing what they're supposed to do. And that's probably what all the other planes did as well. But situations in this convergence of thunderstorms can be very different just a few miles apart from each other.
So help me out with this, though. If it was weather in some way, and that caused this plane to descend and eventually go into the Java Sea, wouldn't there be evidence of that on the radar as the plane was in some sort of free fall?
Well, yes, but the radar hitch, you know, the radar is not, it's kind of like, you know, it's best to think of it as kind of like a 1940s grainy movie. In some parts of the world, radar is very, very basic. And they had radar information that showed the plane, apparently. Now, we don't have, none of this is authenticated, but they had the radar information showing the plane climbing, and then it disappeared from radar. So at that point, something had happened. And it could also be a malfunction on the plane, but something had happened. The plane had either already fallen into the ocean or systems were failing on the plane. Now, the Airbus does have a protective system. When the Airbus is in extremis, the Airbus plane tries to save itself. And so it will shut down non-essential systems to keep the essential systems going. So, for example, if lightning had taken out some of the power, taken out some of the electrical, done damage to some equipment, it might have lost its radios and its transponder or something like that before it actually fell in the ocean. But we don't have the kinds of system that people imagine, you know, the global Google Earth kind of system
yeah.
where we can see everything. Just don't have it for aviation.
Okay, so if it wasn't weather-related, is it such a wide landscape right now to offer up any different theories, or are you just convinced it was weather-related?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I do think that it was weather-related, but that the climb to me was very interesting because the last hit they got, the radar hit they got from the plane was going too slowly. And if you're climbing too slowly, because nobody likes to climb slowly, pilots, you want to firewall it. You want some good speed when you're trying to climb in a thunderstorm. That suggests that the weather was so bad, the engines were sucking in lots of rain and water infecting the performance, or they could have gotten, a headwind can quickly become a tailwind in these kind of situations, or they were in a pretty severe downdraft. So the plane's own capacity was already affected, and so I think what we're going to find is a combination of three things. One, it was the bad weather. Two, the plane was not configured and was not doing a powered enough climb. And three, I suspect we'll find the pilots made some other mistaken operational decisions. Could even had a blocked, what they call an attitude indicator, might have even had some blocked equipment from the ice and rain.
Okay, that's what I was asking about ice, because one of the experts I had a chance to see this morning was talking about that similar to the Air France flight 447 and ice played a role in that. Could ice with the conditions they were dealing with, is that also another possibility here?
Sure, that is a possibility, and this plane has ice protection on the wings and tail and all those kinds of places, of course. So you wouldn't expect to see that on the plane in general that is building up ice, but on, for example, attitude indicators, you know, where the nose is up and down,
yeah.
The pitot tubes are heated and they were replaced, or they were supposed to be replaced after the Air France incident. So, yes, equipment could have been affected by the icing.
Mary Schiavo is with us on the Renters Warehouse Newsmaker Hotline. She was the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation from 1990 to 1996. You see her often on CNN. I really appreciate her coming on. I know, Mary, a lot of people, maybe it was more of us who don't know the story nearly as well, were saying post the Malaysian flight, were any changes going to be made adding to the technology so the next time, and hopefully it would be a long time, unfortunately it was not, the next time a plane, due to weather or some other conditions, went down in the water where it could be a vast area, there would be greater technology to find the planes. Anything changed at all post-Malaysia,
no.
and should anything change?
Oh, of course things should change, and this has been a possibility for many years. Now, the International Civil Aviation Organization is located in Montreal. They and they're the ones who make recommendations to all the countries, to the aviation nations, to make improvements. They recommended that some sort of a system be put in place to require aircraft to steadily stream their data so we don't have to have these frantic searches for the black boxes. But that's under study and advisement, and each country has to adopt the laws. And the United States hasn't even adopted any such requirements. So planes that are already equipped with that capability, and many are, probably about 3,000 already have the capability, only 1/6 of them actually subscribe to the data download service. So even those that are equipped don't use it. And that's really inexcusable in this day and age to rely on 40s technology to track our planes. You know, our phone has better tracking, as the old, you know, as everybody's been saying on television, that's true. So it's going to take the United States of America or some other country to mandate it, make it the law before the airlines will do it, because it's a matter of cost.
Okay, so likelihood after this that, because it hasn't happened in our country, that, you know, there's going to be the will in the U.S. to get this done.
No, there won't be the will in the U.S. to get this done. Things like this take so long. It's just rather, it's, you know, it's really shocking how long things like this take. You know, I would expect that some other country will probably do it first, and then we will do it as a, you know, in the second round of people who do it. For example, given that the three horrific crashes this year were all Malaysian carriers, you know, Malaysia 17, Malaysia 370, and now this is a Malaysia airline, it ought to be Malaysia.
Yeah.
But I doubt it.
Right. Here's another one that's been raised by a few people the last couple of days. Are pilots relying on autopilot too often?
Well, I think yes, but there's a flip side of that. You know, they say that pilot skills are decreasing because everything is automated and they just rely on autopilots. And a lot of times when something goes wrong, they don't know what to do and they haven't had the training. It's a two-part response to that is, one, you have to have the training. So they rely on autopilots, yes, but if airlines don't provide them the what they call upset training or extreme circumstance training, then there's no way for them to know what to do when the autopilot's out. The flip side of that is, of course, that the National Transportation Safety Board in their accident investigation, in about three-fourths of the cases, blames the pilot for the error. So in some cases, the pilot would be better off to let autopilot fly the plane. So there's you know, a couple ways to look at it.
Last thing, the fact that AirAsia has a very good record regarding safety and follow-up and limited accidents, how germane is that to this story?
Well, I that might be a red herring. They don't have a long history. They haven't been around that long.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's easy to say they have a safety record. They just haven't been around very long. So, they haven't crashed in the last couple of years, to me, is not a safety record. When I evaluate airlines for safety, I look at things like incidents, not just accidents. I look at things like pilot deviations. I look at the maintenance crew. I look at where they do the maintenance. And that information is not available on this carrier. So I would just not wholeheartedly say they have a great safety record. I would say they haven't been around long enough to really be tested and tried. And by the way, is an airline that just crashed somewhere that we can't find and killed 157, is it really fair to say they have a good safety record? I would say not, no, but hell no, they do not.
Mary, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation from 1990 to 1996.